This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Dr. Rob Johansson, Director of Economics and Policy Analysis for the American Sugar Alliance. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the Modern Ag Alliance. Learn more at controlweedsnotfarming.com. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with ASA's Dr. Rob Johansson next. Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back at controlweedsnotfarming.com. Paid for by the Modern Ag Alliance. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Sugar cane and sugar beet growers are among a chorus of crop farmers hoping for an updated farm bill this year. Dr. Rob Johansson, Director of Economics and Policy Analysis for the American Sugar Alliance, says their growers are struggling with inflation's impact on crop production.
If you think about how both Title I and Title 11, so the commodity title as well as the crop insurance title, are formulated in the Farm Bill, and obviously, as you noted, it changes a little bit each cycle. But let me just start real fast with crop insurance. Our guys buy crop insurance. It's very important, just like it is for other commodities. So our farmers are also looking for, improvements to those products that manage risk better as those risks, become more prevalent, and also looking to get more affordable in terms of higher buy-up. So that's the same as any other commodity for the most part. On the Title I side, on the commodity side, we don't have an ARC PLC program. There's no base acres for sugar, so they don't participate in those programs. They do, just like other commodities, have a marketing loan program available to them. So both producers of sugar on the beet side as well as on the cane side do have access to marketing loans from the Department of Agriculture. And those loans are taken out to help with the cultivation, the production, the harvesting, the processing of the crops, and repaid as sugar is delivered to customers over the space of the marketing year. So that's, and repaid with interest. So we often point out that with the sugar program, there are no taxpayer costs per se, because all of those loans that are taken out are repaid with interest. And that's the same as you have for 35 or 36 other crops. They have marketing loans too. They just have access to other Title I programs that sugar does not.
Talk about the demand for the product. How much domestic, how much global? How important is trade to sugar producers and the industry they support?
Well, in the United States, we produce, our domestic sugar beet and sugar cane farmers produce about 75% of the sugar that we consume in the United States. The other 25%, and this will change depending on the year, but the other 25% we import. Normally, our biggest import partner is Mexico. And then after Mexico, we have a number of trade agreements through the WTO and through other free trade agreements that provide essentially preferential access to our market up to a certain point. Depending on the year, whether we have perhaps we'll have a higher level of production. Like right now, we're expecting record domestic sugar production in the United States. We'll import a little bit less. And then in other years when we may have, adverse weather conditions and we're not producing as much, we'll import more. So that's essentially how the market works. In terms of the amount of sugar we're talking about, we're essentially consuming about 12.4 million tons of sugar in the U.S. each year. Those are tons of sugar, so obviously multiply by 2,000 to get the number of pounds. And that's been growing roughly over the last, two decades at the growth rate of population in the United States. It's flattened out a little bit over the last couple of years. We've had a number of market adjustments, whether that was the pandemic or supply chain bottlenecks after the pandemic, or just readjustments over the last couple of years with inflation and what have you. But right now, about 12.4 million tons are consumed in the U.S., and we produce about 9.4 of that domestically.
How is the Trump administration's tariffs that they have offered in an effort to balance the playing field in the globe, how is the tariff situation impacting the sugar producers in the country?
Well, right now, as I mentioned, we're a we're an importer of sugar, sugar cane, and or raw sugar from the global market, as well as some refined sugar from the global market. So those imports will face the tariffs that are put on. Of course, Mexico is exempt at the moment, so the sugar we import from Mexico does not face the reciprocal tariffs at this point in time. But just backing up a little bit, we always point, sugar across the globe is a pretty heavily subsidized commodity in other countries, whether we're talking about the big exporters, which are Brazil, India, and Thailand. And so we already have, we have the system in place of in quota and out of quota imports. As I mentioned, we have preferential access for about 1.5 million tons of sugar, and then we import another little over a million and a half, and that comes in under other programs, whether that's Mexico or what's called a high-tier program. High-tier sugar faces imports coming into the country already, so these reciprocal tariffs will have a little bit of effect, but I think for the most part, the market is already used to tariffs in, as far as imports go in the United States.
Rob, this is a broad question, but let's look at the Farm Bill and maybe even consider the administration's effort on tariffs. What do sugar producers need?
Well, Jeff, that's a great question, and it's a lot bigger than the Farm Bill, of course. There isn't, as I mentioned, better crop insurance, whether that's more affordable or more adept at dealing with the risks that our farmers are facing. That's one thing. Certainly, we can always use a better crop insurance product and a more affordable one. Certainly, on the Title I commodity side, our sugar loan rates that we've got for our marketing loans have not been really meaningfully increased in the last three decades going on, or four decades, Elizabeth says. So we're looking for a higher loan rate that better reflects the cost of production on our farms and in our factories. But outside of the Farm Bill, there's a lot of issues that that would address the question you pose, which is whether that's labor or crop protectants or a whole host of inputs in terms of getting credit to our producers, getting fertilizer, crop protectants, and having adequate labor supplies. Those are all outside the Farm Bill, but certainly those are things that we're working on and that we are working with other ag commodities on, looking at, you know, improvements in transportation requirements for moving commodities around the state as well as across borders and that kind of thing.
So how big is the labor situation for you? And some that we've had on this program have suggested now that it appears we have the border secure, it's time to talk about these issues. But in terms of agriculture, what happens if we don't solve that labor problem?
Well, I'll just talk about it from a sugar perspective, Jeff, because I think it is a bigger issue when we open it up to all of agriculture as well as processing of ag commodities in the United States. Our farmers utilize both the H-2A and H-2B programs, and those have been successful at allowing workers from abroad that really value the ability to come to the United States and work on our operations and earn a very good wage. Now, there are a lot of reforms to the H-2A program and H-2B program that our producers are advocating for at the state level as well as at the national level. And those would be, I think, the avenues that we would generally look to see improvements.
If the human consumption is the primary driver of demand for the domestic product and that's imported, what do you have to say from the Dietary Guidelines Committee, from the MAHA effort in the country, and they're scrutinizing recommendations from Washington for what adults and kids should be consuming?
So a couple things there. You know, I'm the sort of economist that looks at farm policy as opposed to sort of diet scientist that looks at food policy. But I think it's fair to say there's no doubt that real natural sugars plays an important role in balanced diets. You know, real sugar, sucrose, is found in plants, most abundant in sugar beet and sugar cane, which we've been talking about, which makes them the most efficient crop for farmers to grow and extract them from. from our position on the DGAs, the Dietary Guidelines for Americans, are sugar beet and sugar cane farmers and companies who make sugar support efforts for all Americans to have the information and choices they need to have a balanced and nutritious and enjoyable diet. Real sugar plays many important roles in food, and we support the government recommendations and nutrition experts' recommendations in the dietary guidelines to keep all added sugars intake to less than 10% of calories. We obviously support any approaches that are grounded in evidence and science and that are practical and flexible for the American public.
This is a day and age where the consumer wants to know more about what they eat, where it came from, how it was produced. And it would seem that, natural products like natural sugar would have a leg up, but you've also found yourself under scrutiny with a particular member of the Trump cabinet naming what all of your producers, everything you do, naming that sugar as poison. I've got to believe that's a challenge for you.
I certainly would say that we do not believe that that's sugar is a poison. As I noted, real sugar is coming from plants, sugar beet and sugar cane. And so in fact, you can go and buy sugar cane and eat it as a on the side of a road in many countries, just as it's harvested from the fields. It's a gold standard for sweetness, and consumers prefer it to alternatives. Now, the secretary at HHS has elevated the topic of healthy diets, and we certainly look forward to discussing with the secretary how sugar and as a natural product fits into the goals for making America healthy again, sort of the MAHA objectives. But again, I would say that the Sugar Association, slightly different from the Sugar Alliance, but they're the science-based organization that leads our industry's expertise on diet and nutrition. And I can tell you that I, as an economist, am thankful that people recognize the importance of evidence-based and nutrition recommendations.
We have a new Secretary of Agriculture, and she comes from Texas. She also spent some time up in the Red River Valley and talking with and working with the sugar industry up there. What contact have you had with this USDA, and what are the messages that your growers and industries are sharing with Secretary Rollins?
Well, we were really honored to have the Secretary, Secretary Brooke Rollins, as well as Senator Hoeven and Congressman Fedorchuk visit last week the Red River Valley. I think I mentioned that both Minnesota and North Dakota are the largest producers of sugar beets and obviously refined sugar from sugar beets. They participated in a roundtable and a sugar production tour where they saw, as you noted, sugar bean extracted from sugar beets at the American Crystal Sugar Company factory up there. And the Secretary of Agriculture, Rollins, spent time with some of our farm families up there and had a great time and made quite an impact on a number of our producers up there. So we've had really good personal contact and she's been traveling a lot to see American agriculture and to introduce herself around. And so I think that is extremely positive. We had a great experience having her visit. And as similarly at the department, a lot of the folks that are working at USDA and have come back as part of the new Trump administration were friends of ours that we knew from the first Trump administration. And so they're going to be important in administering the sugar program and making sure that the marketing loans and as well as the data and information as part of the WASD get out to help our producers and our companies make decisions going forward into the new marketing year.
Rob, you spent your time on Capitol Hill and in tremendous service for the agriculture industry. You've seen a farm bill or two. What are your thoughts about taking a portion of the farm bill and bringing it through the reconciliation process? Is that the best way to go?
let me caveat this. I have spent some time on the Hill, but most of my time was at USDA. And of course, at USDA, we sort of implement what Congress passes in, as part of the Farm Bill. And all of the, we've been clear that we need a new Farm Bill. We've been working with other ag groups on trying to get a new Farm Bill done. It's, you know, we've had two 1-year extensions thus far. The world today in 2025, as our farmers approach planting, and as you noted, with, you know, adverse weather and different other disasters occurring, require a new Farm Bill. It's very different than it was in 2018. We're in a very different situation with respect to trade, with respect to ag markets. And so a new Farm Bill is something that we can't, you know, we're eager to work with Congress on getting a new Farm Bill done. Certainly reconciliation is being talked about as a way, to get some meaningful improvements done. And I'll just say that we're grateful to have very good congressional leadership there. Senator, Majority Leader, John Thune and House Speaker Mike Johnson both come from sugar crop growing states. And as, and I'll also note, Senate Minority Leader Schumer and, House Minority Leader Jeffries both come from a sugar refining state. So, our issues are not going to be a surprise, to the leaders. And of course, we have great leadership, in the ag committees, both in the Senate and the House. One thing that is different this time around, compared to previous Farm Bill efforts is, this iteration of the Farm Bill, as we're pushing forward to get a new Farm Bill done, we do have also the support of a lot of our customers, whether it be the confectioners or the sugar users, who are supporting both the House and the Senate versions that we saw in the 118th Congress. And we expect those provisions to be the ones that are moving forward in this new Congress.
I wonder if it's not a sign of the times, and I'm just wondering this out loud, that if the leadership supporting agriculture is using reconciliation, is that an omen for being able to get a full bill through Congress even this year?
Jeff, that's I think that's a question that a lot of commodity groups are asking, and I think also a lot of those commodity groups, including ours, are just reemphasizing how important it is to get a new Farm Bill done, and we'll continue to, you know, work with everybody on the Hill to get that done.
Rob, I'm going to wonder out loud one more time here, if you'll permit me. If we only produce about 75% of the sugar we consume, it would seem that there should be an opportunity for more sugar production in the country. What's it take for us to be able to produce all that we consume without cutting back on consumption?
Yeah, that's a great question, a great observation. We are producing more sugar each year. Our production of both beet sugar and cane sugar have increased. You know, our yields are going up. We're producing more on our operations, just like other farm operations are producing more. And it's just that, as, you know, population growth occurs, we get more demand as well. So it's all sort of a balance between growth, on the farm and in our factories, as well as growth and demand. So that's not to say we couldn't produce a higher percentage, and we're always shooting to do that. But ultimately you need to have the margin to do that, just like any other commodity. You need to have enough return in order to put those investments into new capacity, whether that's on-farm capacity or processing capacity. And as with anything right now, I'll just give you a little anecdote. I was moderating a session at the most recent USDA Ag Outlook Forum back in February on the sugar panel, and we had a sugar beet producer from Minnesota out, Neil Rockstead. He's the president of the American Sugar Beet Growers Association. And he was relating a story about a tractor on his operation that cost, right around $300,000 back in 2018 is roughly $600,000 today. So, you know, it would be great to produce a higher percentage of sugar that's consumed in our country, and certainly everybody is continually increasing their productivity, and we are producing more sugar. But ultimately, you have to balance out the cost side, too, and right now, it is very expensive to buy new machinery, both on the farm and in the factory. Challenging environment to know what input costs are going to be moving forward, just because we've seen those jump up by double digits over the last couple of years. So I guess I wouldn't say that's out of the question as we look forward into the future. But, you know, right now, I would like to note that we are producing record amounts of sugar this year in the U.S. and on top of record amounts last year. And that's a good thing. Our sugar beet and sugar cane family farmers are proud to supply 75% of such a critical a food ingredient, and of course they're always looking to do more.
I think it's fair to say from your remarks thus far that the inflationary period that we have seen with farm inputs, whether it's that goes in the soil, the machines to operate the business, or the crop protection products, even the seed, inflation is a big part of your bottom line, and you're no different in that than all the rest of the industry that has faced that as a challenge.
Well, that's right, Jeff. Yeah. And, you know, just like other commodity groups have, you know, calculated how much their cost of production have gone up over since the last farm bill, for example. And, you know, we're right in line with similar types of increases, about 30% up since 2018, maybe even a little bit more now. Of course, we are seeing some, you know, energy prices have come down a little bit. And I think, the forecast for diesel over the next couple of years is flat to slowly declining, which is, you know, a big input cost for a lot of farm operations. So that's good. But on the other hand, you know, we talked a little bit about labor. Labor costs are going up. Crop protectant costs are going up. You name it. So yeah, we're very cognizant, just like other commodities are, of inflation on inputs, whether those are on the, you know, intended for farm production or just even in the factory when we're replacing some of those big capital investments or improving them or trying to expand capacity. That comes at a significant cost that needs to be financed over a number of years.
Well, Rob Johansson, we want to thank you very much for taking time to be with us and talk about America's sweetest industry. We appreciate your service to the industry of agriculture. Thanks for being with us on this edition of Open Mic. Rob, it is Open Mic, and today you get the last word.
Well, thanks so much, Jeff. We here at the American Sugar Alliance are very happy to represent the more than 11,000 sugar beet and sugar cane farmers across the country. Those farmers produce, as we've just been talking about 75% of America's sugar needs. They contribute more than 151,000 jobs to good-paying jobs across the country, and also add about 23 and a little bit more billion to the economy each year. So that's an industry that we're looking towards growing going into the future, and also looking forward to pushing a new farm bill across the finish line.
Our thanks to Dr. Rob Johansson, Director of Economics and Policy Analysis for the American Sugar Alliance, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the Modern Ag Alliance. Learn more at controlweedsnotfarming.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Dowling.